All right, everybody, welcome back. This week we're going to be talking about some aspects of computer programming which deal more with dealing with web-based interfaces, doing things online using XHTML, things like PHP, and making use of databases. And we'll be covering a variety of topics which will help prepare you for PSET 7 in addressing how to implement CS50 Finance. So the first thing we're going to do is just talk a little bit about XHTML, what exactly it is, how it's formatted, and what you can generate using XHTML. So you see here we have, right on my my cloud account, we have this folder called public HTML. So let's go ahead and navigate into here and just see what the contents are. I seem to have a variety of PHP files. So if I go ahead and take a look in one of these PHP files, say I just, for the purpose of our demo, look at demo.php. Essentially what this is a PHP file which is interpreted by a PHP interpreter, which we'll get to later. But what happens here essentially is that an HTML file is outputted. If you've ever played around with web design before, you might be familiar with HTML files. You may have written some previously, but if you haven't, we'll cover the basics, so don't worry about it. But essentially in an HTML file, you're placing some formatting in such a way that your web browser, maybe you use Internet Explorer, Mozilla Firefox, or Google Chrome, is able to look at this and then format a web page which you can view on your screen when you go to a certain URL. So for example, if you go somewhere like google.com or facebook.com, you'll end up finding your browser essentially reaches out, finds this HTML file which contains all this formatting information, and then interprets that in such a way that displays a web page on your screen. So you see here we begin with this HTML tag. And notice that we have these tags which are enclosed in angle brackets. So we have a left angle bracket and a right angle bracket, and then the name of a tag, in this case HTML, head, title, body, followed by some parameters which apply to that tag. Don't worry too much about these particular parameters. They're mainly just for declaring a certain type of strict HTML which we're adhering to, or transitional HTML or XHTML which we're adhering to. It doesn't have as much to do with the formatting, and we can just wave our hands at that for now. Here we have the head section, which defines the header of the web page. If you notice ever the top of the window, in Windows you might have this blue bar near the top. And normally if you navigate to a web page, you have the name of the web page. Maybe Google or Facebook.com will appear there. It's the name of your window, essentially. By placing title within our head section of our HTML file, we're able to define what exactly is going to be written there, what the name of our window or our web page when we're focused on that particular window is, in that case. Next, we have the body tag. Everything contained within the body tag, and you'll notice once again that at the bottom of the file we have this complement tag. It is the same name as the original body tag, except with this forward slash, which indicates that we've reached the end of our body. And you notice that we have a complementary end tag for most of our beginning tags throughout the HTML file, except for some notable cases, which I'll point out as we go. And the body tag just defines what occurs in the main section of your window within your browser, as opposed to the address bar or the header in the bar at the top of the screen, as I've already mentioned. Next, we have a tag called div, and this just stands for division. It's essentially a tag that just takes a region of the body and then applies some formatting properties to it. For example, here we have a line equals center, and as you'd expect, and as I'll show on the page which is output, we end up with everything on the page being centered because it's all contained within this division tag, which takes up a part of the web page and makes it so that the alignment is center as it's been defined. Oh, you'll also notice here that in Google Chrome, which I'm using for the purposes of this demo, you don't have a bar at the top of your window in the way you do in other browsers, but you do have the name of your page, which is included in that tag. And you'll notice that it is, in fact, demo page, as we've defined in our HTML file. Here you have an image tag. Source, SRC, is the shorthand for it. It defines what file we're going to be looking to display on the page. You will have noticed when I showed the window previously that we did have a picture there that is apparently located at images/cslogo.png. And note here that we end our tag with this forward slash. What's happening there is that this tag is being opened and closed at once. Since for an image tag, it doesn't really make sense for us to have an opening and a closing tag because, honestly, there's nothing we could put in between. It's just defined by the source property what is going to be displayed. It's just this image. It's not necessary to have a second tag, and so we're able to end it immediately within the same tag. Next, we have something that's going to be very important when we're talking about how we're going to be submitting information from one page to another. We have a form. And you'll also notice, we'll come back to the form in just a moment, but we have a table. And what this essentially does is allow us to format our information in a particular way. I've set border equal to 1 to kind of help us visualize what exactly is happening here. Now, if we look back at the page, you'll notice we have 2 rows in this table. And in each one, we have these 2 cells. So we have the instructions in the left cell, and then the input type, the form of input which we're placing on the form, in which relates to that information on the right cell. So the way that's formatted is we begin a new row on our table with this TR tag, placing an NTR tag after we've finished the row. And for each cell within the table, we are placing this TD tag, just to indicate that this is a cell in the table and the contents go in that cell. So that's essentially how you would format a table using XHTML. Going back to the form, since this is something that's going to be very important, well, we'll get to that in just a moment. Actually, let's back out for just a second. So it seems that we're giving these users who are just connecting to this web page remotely through the internet a lot of access to our files, which seems like it could lend itself to some insecurity. These are files on cloud.cs50.net that I'm using. I'm just using my regular cloud account, and I seem to be giving people access to this information just by connecting through web server to cloud.cs50.net/tilde my username, and then allowing them to see demo.php. I'm apparently also allowing them to see this image file which appears here. And that seems like it lends itself to some degree of insecurity and is something maybe we should be concerned about. And the reason this is possible is because I have previously set the permissions on these particular files so that people connecting through a web browser are able to access them. And the way I did this is with some function a shell command called chmod, which lets me declare what the permissions are for any particular file. If I take a look, example, by backing out and typing ls-l, this will bring up a list of all the files and directories here, along with this somewhat cryptic string here containing these letter symbols and then these dashes. And this essentially tells me what the permissions for this particular directory in this case, or any file that we're here as well, are at this moment. You notice we have this D on the left. Don't concern yourself with that for now. That's nothing you need to worry about at this time. You can essentially see how this is divided up into 3 triplets, where we have these 3 symbols, these 3 symbols, and then these 3 symbols. And I talked last week about how we could store more information than we would normally using something like an int in a bit string, and that's exactly what's actually happening here. If you consider just these 9 symbols, these 9 spaces in this string, as being single bits, then you could consider how we could look at each of these triplets as being 3 distinct numbers. You could store a value from 0 to 7 in each of these triplets by altering whether or not this bit is turned on or off. If there's a symbol here, a letter symbol, an alphabetical symbol, then we know that that bit is flipped on. If there's a dash, what it's telling us is that that bit is flipped off. And the reason this is significant is because we can chmod a file and change the numerical values of each of these 3 triplets. And this will allow us to say something about what the permissions for that file or directory are. And it'll also influence whether or not they're able to access them. So you see here we have these 3 bits turned on. So this triplet has a value of 7. This triplet has a value of 1 because only this first position is turned on. This triplet also has a value of 1. So what these 3 triplets represent are user permissions. These are my permissions. This file belongs to me, Chartier. Here we have group permissions. The group is staff. So the CS50 staff would be able to execute this directory, but not read or write into it or from it. And here we have world permissions, which are pertinent to accessing the server through a web browser, one would think, since someone connecting through a web browser doesn't have any permissions on the server. They're just some anonymous user surfing the web in their web browser. So the way I set this to be the appropriate numbers would be just typing chmod, and then the number I'd like to set it to, considering each one of these a distinct digit in a 3-digit number. So the first digit I type would set the user permissions, in this case 7, because I want to have read, write, and execute. So 1, 2, 4, 4 plus 2 plus 1, just looking at it as a binary number, an integer, that only consists of 3 bits in this case. Then 1, then 1. So this is going to basically, this isn't going to change anything. This is just going to set it to the same values they already are. You can see that it doesn't change. Since that's less interesting than another example, I'll set chmod it to 600. And you'll see that things will have changed. right now I only have read and write access, and no one has any other access to this file. And I'll reset that so we don't encounter any problems. It's important to note that public HTML is included within another directory. Oh, ignore this. Let me just go ahead and get that off the screen. Okay. So in this case, getting a little more information. Okay, so you'll notice this tilde, which just indicates the root directory. This is my root. So if we look here, we have root, and its permissions are also set to something similar, which gives execution access to people outside. That also has to be set so that they can get to the public HTML directory itself. Otherwise, they might not be able to access it. And that's just something to consider when you're setting permissions and trying to let people access public HTML. And the significance of the folder being called public HTML is that just by convention, if I look, or the way the server is set up, rather, if I go here and I notice that I just type in slash tilde my username, and then I immediately go to the name of the file I want, that's because that file is located in public HTML, and it's accessible to me in the web browser in that way, just in the way we have our directory structure set up. So now if I look at the files I have contained within here, when I have my PHP files, you'll notice I have this set to a value of what would be equivalent to 6, because the leftmost two bits are set. Everything else is set to 0. The reason for this is because I don't want people to actually be able to read my PHP files. I don't want them to be able to open them up and poke around and see what's going on in my code. We'll use this to segue into a discussion of what exactly we mean when we're talking about PHP. PHP, like C, is a programming language. Unlike C, it's not a compiled language. It's interpreted. What that means is that when we run PHP code, we're not running some binary that's been compiled for us. We're taking this PHP code, which we've written, and we're passing it to an interpreter. And this interpreter program looks at that code, and it does something with what it sees, and outputs the result immediately. It's not necessarily to compile the code, it's just run on the fly. And what this allows us to do is write up these PHP files like I showed you previously, which resemble HTML files. And in this case, there is no PHP code enclosed here, but if I go to my next example, we also include within these angle bracket question mark tags something that resembles C code, only a slightly different syntax. And what this is PHP code. And what happens is when this is opened up by the web browser, the server sees that there's PHP code contained here. This PHP file is run through your PHP interpreter. All this code is executed, and then everything that isn't contained within those tags is printed to the screen as valid HTML, XHTML rather. And also we see here examples where we're running these conditional statements to determine whether something is printed to the screen using this echo command. So you can essentially see it's, in practice, implementing things in PHP is very similar to how you'd implement things in C in terms of syntax and just the general philosophy of writing out commands which provoke a response. But as an interpreted language, it allows us to do these things on the fly through an interpreter on the server side and then generate output to the user without actually allowing them to get into our files and see what's going on here. This is really useful because if you think of sites like Facebook, if you've ever taken a look in your address bar when you're on Facebook, you'll notice that there's not really any HTML files, I believe. It's all done in PHP. So if you can imagine if you were able to access PHP files and take a look inside of them, you could basically implement your own version of Facebook on your own server and compete directly with them having stolen all of their code. Obviously, this is less than desirable, so we have this set up in place where we can set these access restrictions on the files, and it's not necessary for users to be able to get into the PHP files. They're simply able to get the output into their browser and make use of the functionality of your website. Okay, so let's move back into demo.php and move on to a discussion of forms. So let me first show what the functionality of this little demo that I've whipped together is. So essentially we just have a simple form here where we're able to type in a name. I'll just type in my own name for now. It instructs us to check this box. Okay, so I'll do that. And then I'm being asked, did I check the box? So I'll say yes, being honest. I hit go to submit. And it tells me that it congratulated me on my work on the form, and it informs me the information that has been submitted to a remote database, which is interesting. So we'll get to that later and find out what that exactly means, that the information has been submitted. But just to demonstrate the other functionality of this particular form, if I type in a different name, Chloe, just to choose one out of the air, I don't check the box, but I say I did check the box and I submit the form. I'm a liar, and it still says my information has been submitted to a remote database. But I get a slightly different output. So essentially, we're providing information from demo.php to demo2.php, if you notice the title of the other page was demo2.php, and it's making use of this information which has been provided to it, and then programmatically making a decision as to what to show me on the screen. So we're basically generating dynamic output, which has not been hard-coded, but which rather is the product of an interpretation of this PHP source code, which we included in the file. One can easily see how, rather than HTML, as opposed to HTML, this allows us a lot more flexibility into building dynamic websites, which are going to be a lot more interesting. So the way this form is implemented is by starting a form tag, setting the action attribute equal to whatever page we want to send this information to make use of it, in this case, demo2.php, and the method by which we're providing this information. In this case, we're using a method called post. Essentially, what that means is it's using something that's very common. It's essentially this HTTP packet of information, which allows us to bundle a series of variables into this what is treated as an associative array by PHP, which we'll see more of in demo 2.php. So essentially just a structure which contains a lot of information which is being sent to this other page so that it can take that information out and make use of it and make decisions based on it. So it's allowing us to keep this information around for a little longer and do something as a result of it, just allowing us to take the contents of this form and move them around and do something interesting. So within our form, you'll notice we have these input tags, which we give names. These names are important for referencing the information which is tied to these different types of input later on in our post method. And we have various types of input. You'll notice we have a type text, which is simply this text box into which we're typing a name. We also have the checkbox type, which is just where we're indicating to check this box. It can either be true or false. It can be checked or unchecked. It just alternates between these two Boolean values. And then we have these two radio inputs. Note that they have the same name, and their type is a radio input, but they have two distinct values. So after one has been toggled, and you toggle the other, it jumps to one or the other. It's never both of them which are toggled. And if I had multiple, three or four maybe, then only one of them would ever stay lit up. You have a situation in which only one value can be turned on at a time, and whichever one you clicked last is the new value. And then we see here the final input type. We have a submit button. It's a type of submit. I just call to action. And the value is go. If I were to change that right now and change it to something like submit, you'll see that in this case the value for this action or this input type is simply whatever the button's going to end up saying. Okay, so what's happening with this information? We've seen that it's being passed to demo2.php, so let's take a look at what's going to be done with whatever information is being passed. Up here I have something that I'm going to wave my hands at for now. We'll come back to it later when we're talking about MySQL databases, but you can see we have a little bit of a PHP going on near the top of our file. So let's just move on beyond that for now. Okay. So right here, we're checking on $_post. And we have these square brackets, so it kind of looks like we're referencing something that resembles an array. But it's kind of strange because we're placing strings within the array where we'd normally place our numerical element or our index value, which we're looking for within the array. So first off, you'll notice that we start a variable name with a dollar sign. That's a convention in PHP. Any variable you declare in PHP should begin with a dollar sign. But you'll also note that we don't have to declare any type for this variable. It just exists as a result of being passed to us. And also, even if I were to create some type of variable, for example, you'll see how I make a variable type called query, which once again we'll talk about later. It does not have any particular type defined as being in relation to it or defining what type of input it takes. It just is. It just can take in values which are assigned to it. So PHP is clearly a slightly more flexible or forgiving language in terms of assigning types to your variables. So coming back to this, we'll see here that I'm checking if post name is equal to a blank string. So you recall that the name of the text field, the text box input on the previous page, was called name. So essentially what's happening here is we're referencing the information which was placed in that text field with $_post_name. This associative array, which is what this is, allows us to refer to an element within an array, not by its position within the array, as we normally would with a 0, 1, or a 2, or any other positive integer, or a non-negative integer, rather, but by just giving the name of what that value is. Under the hood, there's essentially some hashing going on. It's finding where this value lives. You don't have to worry about that in PHP. It just happens under the hood. You can access whatever it is you're looking for by name by accessing it within this associative array, which is created for you. I'm also checking, this is just an OR, like in C. I'm checking whether answer is equal to this blank string. You'll recall that the radio command, the radio input, yes or no, did you check the box, was could have values of yes or no. What you might not have known is that if you don't click either of them, there is no value, so it's just this blank string. So essentially what I'm doing here is checking whether or not a name has been provided and whether or not they've answered whether or not they've checked the box. If they have not done that, then they haven't filled out what I consider to be the required components of the form. And I'm using this echo command, which just prints something out to the HTML file, so prints something on the screen, essentially, which tells them to please fill out the form correctly. If I move on, I'll see that I have an else if statement. Notice this slightly tricky syntax, perhaps, if you've gotten overly used to C. Else if is just uses one word. Else if I have a situation where there's a little bit of an inconsistency in their input. For example, if they did check the box, but they answered no, that they did not check it, or they have not checked the box, but they answered that yes, in fact, they did check it, we make an assertion regarding the character of the user. We call them a liar because they are. If any of this does not happen, then we can assume that the form has been filled out correctly because any other combination of input where a name has been entered, they've answered the question, and the answer to the question is correlates rather with the state of the checkbox, means that they have filled out the form correctly, and you'll see we're doing something here, making use of a database. And actually, this should be changed because you'll note previously that we were printing out that the information had been sent to a database even when the information form had not been filled out correctly, but that's actually not true. We only want to do that when they have entered the information correctly. So just change that slightly here. So you'll see now that this message is only being printed out in the case that everything that we do have this else statement executing. So, if we go back and take a look at that, we'll see that should actually be, we'll use rows for this example. Check this box. Did you check the box? Yes. That the information has been sent to a remote database. So, let's talk a little bit about what exactly this remote database is. We're using a database system called MySQL, and you're going to be able to access information regarding your own personal database through a PHP interface on cs50.net's website. If you go to, I believe it's cs50.net/me, which I won't go to now for obvious reasons, it will show the password for your database, which you'll be able to use to access cs50.net/phpMyAdmin and log into this administrative interface, which allows you to take a look at any databases which you have placed affiliated with your account. So you'll see here that I have several databases which have been set up for me. They're my username _pset7, my username _pset8, and my username _fp, final project. So obviously we're going to be asking you to use phpMyAdmin in pset7, next week's after the quiz, pset8, as well as if you'd like to implement some type of web-based project, you have a database available for you for your final project as well. So if I take a look in one of these databases, say pset7, which is the one that you should be using this week, you'll notice I have a few different database tables set up. So I'll go ahead and take a look at demo. So these are the entries which I've received from the page. You'll notice I have Matt twice. And also Rose, since that was the name I just typed in when I submit information on the form. And to prove that this is indeed how this information is getting into the form, I'll try one more name, this time Rashid. I'll check the box. I'll say yes that I did check the box. Next, we're on the form, info set to remote database. If I browse again to show the information, voila, Rashid has been added to this form remotely via PHP. So somehow I'm able to access this database and insert information to it from a remote web page using some sort of PHP statements, which allow me to send what are called queries to my MySQL database and perform operations on them. So first, let's take a look at what some of these SQL operations which can be performed are. There's a handy interface here where you click on the SQL tab in phpMyAdmin where you can actually just type in SQL queries and see what the results are on your tables. So for example, if I were to say insert into, recall that the name of our current table is demo, insert into demo, value. And then if you notice in demo, there was just one value for each row, one column, so to speak. It was called name. So if I then type in within these parentheses, whatever I want to place within that value, in this case, perhaps I want Alice, then what should happen when I hit go is that Alice is inserted into this database. So yeah, so that's how we would do an insertion into a database table. Another operation we could perform is a selection. Say we want to get some information from a database after it's been inserted. So we could select all, which would be represented by an asterisk, from then the name of the table, say demo, and then some condition. So for example, where name equals Matt. And if I were to do that, I should just get one row returned, the one row from the table where the name is in fact equal to Matt. So you can see how there might be some broader application to this in PHP where you'd want to get information from the database after it's been included, maybe information about a user's account, whatever stocks might be affiliated with their account that you could perhaps display on the page somehow, by using this selection statement to get information out of that database after you've included it there. Some other operations you can perform. There would be what haven't I done already? We have delete from. So if I wanted to delete a row from the database, delete from demo where, and then some condition. So for example, if I wanted to this time delete myself from the database, name equals Matt. And you'll see that I have, in fact, been deleted from the database, leaving just Rashid, Allen, and Rose at this point. One more type of statement which we can provide to the MySQL database would be an update. For example, if you wanted to, someone might have a certain amount of money affiliated with their account, some number that you want to change. You could get the information from that row, delete the row from the database as it currently is, and then make a new row and add that to the database, but that seems excessively cumbersome and something that we really shouldn't have to do. And we do, in fact, have one single statement, an update statement, where we can type update in all caps, the name of the table, and then set, and then leave it be. Name equals, maybe we want to change the name to Roger, where name is equal to Alice. And if we go into the browse, and hopefully, yeah, we should see that Alice's name has in fact been changed to Roger. Normally, we're not going to want to change a username for someone's account, except in cases where you would want to support that on your website, if that were a feature you wanted to include. But normally we might be changing some certain values, maybe preferences on a web forum, perhaps, and also in the example I gave, which is suggestive of what we'd be doing on this week's problem set, changing values which reflect the monetary status of that user. Okay, so we've run through some of the different types of SQL statements which can be passed in. So let's take a look at what we can do in PHP to perform some of these actions through a web page. So you'll notice here that I'm establishing a connection to a MySQL database. And I'm including up at the top constants.php. This is all something that is done in common.php and the pset7 distribution code. I'm just doing it here on my own to be a little more explicit about what's happening. Note that I'm not checking as to whether these connections are successful. I'm just making them to kind of leave this simple so we can just look at what's happening. But do keep in mind that when you do make a connection to a MySQL server, you always want to check it to see if you were able to make that connection successfully. I'm playing it a little fast and loose now just to make things a little more explicit, but this is something you need to concern yourself with in pset7. So I'm establishing a connection using this MySQL connect function. I'm including these constants as arguments, db server, db user, and db pass. They're essentially just being defined as constants in constants.php. So much like you'd use a pound define statement to define constants, this can be done in PHP as well. I'm not going to show constants.php for obvious reasons, such that someone watching on the internet can't get into my database and start messing with my tables. You also see here that we're selecting a database, in this case, database name, and then using this connection handle, which we've gotten by assigning to it whatever MySQL connect returned. If you're curious about what values exactly are being returned, there's a very good documentation of all these functions on the PHP documentation website if you just simply do a Google search. You should be able to find on the PHP manual at php.net all sorts of information about what each of these functions do. David has mentioned in lecture, and I will emphasize now that PHP is an extremely well-documented language, and there's no reason you shouldn't be able to find a lot of information, as well as some very handy examples, in fact, as to what exactly each of these functions will be doing, which should make your life a lot easier when you're attempting to implement problem set 7. So you'll see here, I'm selecting a database, which will allow me to make use of it later, and then I'm doing something else here. I'm performing a realist. I'm using this MySQL realescape escape string function on post name. So what's essentially happening is that I'm taking in this this name input the user has typed into the text box, which is just plain text. It's taken in directly as they've given it to me, and I'm doing something to it to make sure that things are kept secure. And I'll come back to this in a moment after we have a better sense of exactly what's happening with this post name variable. So you'll notice that I'm only sending a query when they've entered the form incorrectly. I'm not going to worry about the forms which haven't been entered correctly. I don't want those in my database. I have no use for them. I'm making that assumption about the implementation of this demo. So in the case where we have been successful in getting the form completed correctly, we're setting query, which is going to be a string, into whatever printf is going to return, which is just getting a formatted string, much in the way that you would use printf in C, which is going to be of the form insert into demo, our demo table in our database, values, and then you'll see here that I'm just inserting the value string name. And then I'm using this MySQL query statement to send a query directly to the table, or to the MySQL database, which is going to act on my demo table. So it seems like I could have just sent the string which is inputted directly. Like, there's really nothing wrong with the string Matt, for example, or Rashid, or any other name which might be submitted. So it seems strange that I'm taking that extra step, because as I showed you in the PHP MyAdmin interface, I can just type something like, here as well, just directly insert, just typing something like Evan is going to successfully submit things. So it doesn't really seem like there's anything wrong with that plain text. The reason we do that is because you'll see here we have the MySQL interpretation of this this action which we just took, one way of writing out this command which we just automatically made by using this insert function which is made available through the website. You'll see here that whatever we typed, in this case the string Evan, is just injected directly there. So why might that prove problematic? Is there something the user could provide in place of just a legitimate name that would maybe wreak havoc on our table? Here's a very interesting case which could arise. So what this hacker mom is saying here is that it's not her fault that their table got dropped because they should have been sanitizing their database inputs. Her son is allegedly named Robert single quote, end parentheses, semicolon, drop table students, semicolon. So if we're, we could imagine that they're entering a database of students and providing this as the value for name, and apparently it's causing them to lose all their student records. And the reason which is given for this happening is because they're not sanitizing their database inputs. Sanitizing your database inputs is exactly what happens when you run the MySQL real escape string function on a plain text string input. It's essentially going to look for things which can cause trouble when placed into the middle of a MySQL query, and then change the formatting such that we don't end up having a problem. For example, if we had provided as our name that string which came from that webcomic, then we'd see a situation in which we would in fact be dropping the table because one command would be ended while another one began, which would in fact drop the entire student table. And just to demonstrate this and show that it is in fact a problem, let's take a look at this student's table that I've thrown together. I have a list of students at Harvard. So if we were to perform an SQL query, insert into students value, and then we'll use little Bobby tables as an example, Robert, and then the information being provided continues, because if you remember, the name being provided was Robert, quote, end parentheses, semicolon, and then it continued drop table students, another semicolon. Then what we'll see here is both of these actions are going to be taken. And if you'll notice on the left, I no longer have a table called students. So essentially what just happened was a MySQL injection attack, which injected this additional statement, which I didn't actually want to execute, but which the user forced me to by injecting it into the SQL query. And you'll see this is exactly why it's always essential to escape any input which is being placed into your query, lest your data not be secure and you could find everything being dropped by a malicious user simply by using this MySQL injection attack. Okay. And assuming that the string has been escaped, however, this is a risk which is completely mitigated, not anything that needs to be worried about. The MySQL real escape string is effective at going through the string and removing any characters which might allow this to happen. It'll take out things like the semicolons and the parentheses, which could prove problematic, ensuring that you have a high degree of safety in providing direct access to passing information into your MySQL database, and you won't get situations like this. Provided you remember always for any string input being entered into your database to run the MySQL real escape string function on it. Okay, that's all I have for this week. Thanks and good luck on your next problem set.